Surely you and all your people know that it is customary for others in all the worlds of the galaxy to retain their cephalic hair.
We know. And those among us, like myself, who must deal with tribesmen now and then, must witness this hair. We manage, but it is unfair to ask the brethren generally to suffer the sight.
Selden said, Very well then, Sun Master. But tell me, since you were born with cephalic hair, as all of us are, and as you all retain it visibly till puberty, why is it so necessary to remove it? Is it just a matter of custom, or is there some rationale behind it? And the old Mycogenian said proudly,
By depilation, we demonstrate to the youngster that he or she has become an adult, and through depilation, adults will always remember who they are, and never forget that all others are but tribesmen.
He waited for no response, and in truth, Selden could think of none, but brought out from some hidden compartment in his robe a handful of thin bits of plastic of varying color, stared keenly at the two faces before him, holding first one strip, then another, against each face.
The colors must match reasonably, he said. No one will be fooled into thinking you are not wearing a skin cap, but it must not be repulsively obvious.
Finally, Sun Master gave a particular strip to Selden and showed him how it could be pulled out into a cap.
Please put it on, Tribesman Selden, he said. You will find the process clumsy at first, but you will grow accustomed to it.
Selden put it on, but the first two times it slipped off when he tried to pull it backward over his hair.
Begin just above your eyebrows, said Sun Master.
His fingers seemed to twitch, as though eager to help. Selden said, suppressing a smile, Would you do it for me? And Sun Master drew back, saying almost in agitation,
I couldn't. I would be touching your hair.
Selden managed to hook it on and followed Sun Master's advice, in pulling it here and there until all his hair was covered. The eyebrow patches fitted on easily. Doris, who had watched carefully, put hers on without trouble. How does it come off? Asked Selden.
You have but to find an end, and it will peel off without trouble. You will find it easier both to put on and take off if you cut your hair shorter.
I'd rather struggle a bit, said Selden. Then, turning to Doris, he said in a low voice, You're still pretty, Doris, but it does tend to remove some of the character from your face. The character is there underneath, just the same, she answered. And I dare say you'll grow accustomed to the hairless me. In a still lower whisper, Selden said, I don't want to stay here long enough to get accustomed to this. Sunmaster, who ignored with visible haughtiness the mumblings among mere tribesmen, said,
If you will enter my ground car, I will now take you into Mycogen.
37. Frankly, whispered Doris, I can scarcely believe I'm on Trantor. I take it, then, you've never seen anything like this before, said Selden. I've only been on Trantor for 2 years, and I've spent much of my time at the university, so I'm not exactly a world traveler. Still, I've been here and there, and I've heard of this and that, but I've never seen or heard of anything like this. The sameness. Sunmaster drove along methodically and without undue haste. There were other wagon-like vehicles in the roadway, all with hairless men at the controls, their bald pates gleaming in the light. On either side there were three-story structures, unornamented, all lines meeting at right angles, everything gray in color. Dreary, mouthed Doris. So dreary. Egalitarian, whispered Selden. I suspect no brother can lay claim to precedence of any obvious kind over any other. There were many pedestrians on the walkways as they passed. There were no signs of any moving corridors, and no sound of any nearby expressway. Doris said, "I'm guessing the Grays are women." "It's hard to tell," said Selden. "The gowns hide everything, and one hairless head is like another."
"The Grays are always in pairs, or with a white. The whites can walk alone, and Sunmaster is a white."
"You may be right." Selden raised his voice. "Sunmaster, I am curious."
"If you are, then ask what you wish, although I am by no means required to answer."
"We seem to be passing through a residential area. There are no signs of business establishments, industrial areas."
"We are a farming community entirely. Where are you from that you do not know this?"
"You know I am an outworlder," Selden said stiffly. "I have been on Trantor for only 2 months."
"Even so."
"But if you are a farming community, Sunmaster, how is it that we have passed no farms either?"
"On lower levels," said Sunmaster briefly.
"Is Mycogen on this level entirely residential, then?"
"And on a few others. We are what you see. Every brother and his family lives in equivalent quarters. Every cohort in its own equivalent community. All have the same ground cars, and all brothers drive their own. There are no servants, and none are at ease through the labor of others. None may glory over another."
Selden lifted his shielded eyebrows at Doris and said, "But some of the people wear white, while some wear gray."
"That is because some of the people are brothers, and some are sisters."
"And we?"
"You are a tribesman and a guest. You and your—"
He paused and then said,
"companion will not be bound by all aspects of Mycogenian life. Nevertheless, you will wear a white gown, and your companion will wear a gray one, and you will live in special guest quarters like our own."
"Equality for all seems a pleasant ideal, but what happens as your numbers increase? Is the pie then cut into smaller pieces?"
"There is no increase in numbers. That would necessitate an increase in area, which the surrounding tribesmen would not allow, or a change for the worse in our way of life."
"But if—" began Selden. Sunmaster cut him off.
"It is enough, Tribesman Selden. As I warned you, I am not compelled to answer. Our task, which we have promised our friend Tribesman Hummin, is to keep you secure as long as you do not violate our way of life. That we will do, but there it ends. Curiosity is permitted, but it wears out our patience quickly if persisted in."
Something about his tone allowed no more to be said, and Selden chafed. Hummin, for all his help, had clearly misstressed the matter. It was not security that Selden sought, at least not security alone. He needed information, too, and without that he could not and would not stay here. 38. Selden looked with some distress at their quarters. It had a small but individual kitchen and a small but individual bathroom. There were two narrow beds, two clothes closets, a table, and two chairs. In short, there was everything that was necessary for two people who were willing to live under cramped conditions.
"We had an individual kitchen and bathroom at Cinna," said Doris with an air of resignation.
"Not I," said Selden. "Helicon may be a small world, but I lived in a modern city. Community kitchens and bathrooms. What a waste this is. You might expect it in a hotel, where one is compelled to make a temporary stay. But if the whole sector is like this, imagine the enormous number and duplications of kitchens and bathrooms.
Part of the egalitarianism, I suppose, said Doris. No fighting for favored stalls or for faster service. The same for everyone.
No privacy, either. Not that I mind terribly, Doris, but you might, and I don't want to give the appearance of taking advantage. We ought to make it clear to them that we must have separate rooms, adjoining, but separate.
Doris said, I'm sure it won't work. Space is at a premium, and I think they are amazed by their own generosity in giving us this much. We'll just make do, Harry. We're each old enough to manage. I'm not a blushing maiden, and you'll never convince me that you're a callow youth.
You wouldn't be here were it not for me.
What of it? It's an adventure.
All right, then. Which bed will you take? Why don't you take the one nearer the bathroom? He sat down on the other. There's something else that bothers me. As long as we're here, we're tribespeople, you and I, as is even Haman. We're of the other tribes, not their own cohorts, and most things are none of our business. But most things are my business. That's what I've come here for. I want to know some of the things they know.
Or think they know,
said Doris with a historian's skepticism.
I understand they have legends that are supposed to date back to primordial times, but I can't believe they can be taken seriously.
We can't know that until we find out what those legends are. Are there no outside records of them?
Not that I know of. These people are terribly ingrown. They're almost psychotic in their inward clinging. That Haman can break down their barriers somewhat, and even get them to take us in, is remarkable. Really remarkable.
Selden brooded. There has to be an opening somewhere. Sunmaster was surprised, angry in fact, that I didn't know Mycogen was an agricultural community. That seems to be something they don't want kept a secret.
The point is, it isn't a secret. Mycogen is supposed to be from archaic words meaning yeast producer. At least, that's what I've been told. I'm not a paleolinguist. In any case, they culture all varieties of microfood. Yeast, of course, along with algae, bacteria, multicellular fungi, and so on.
That's not uncommon, said Selden. Most worlds have this microculture. We have some even on Helicon.
Not like Mycogen. It's their specialty. They use methods as archaic as the name of their section. Secret fertilizing formulas. Secret environmental influences. Who knows what? All is secret.
Ingrown.
With a vengeance. What it amounts to is that they produce protein and subtle flavoring so that their microfood isn't like any other in the world. They keep the volume comparatively low, and the price is sky high. I've never tasted any, and I'm sure you haven't, but it sells in great quantities to the imperial bureaucracy and to the upper classes on other worlds. Mycogen depends on such sales for its economic health, so they want everyone to know that they are the source of this valuable food. That, at least, is no secret.
Mycogen must be rich, then.
They're not poor, but I suspect that it's not wealth thereafter. It's protection. The imperial government protects them, because without them, there wouldn't be these microfoods that add the subtlest flavors, the tangiest spices to every dish. That means that Mycogen can maintain its odd way of life and be haughty toward its neighbors, who probably find them insupportable.
Doris looked about.
They live an austere life. There's no holovision, I notice, and no book films.
I noticed one in the closet up on the shelf.
Selden reached for it, stared at the label, and then said in clear disgust, "A cookbook."
Doris held out her hand for it and manipulated the keys. It took a while, for the arrangement was not quite orthodox, but she finally managed to light the screen and inspect the pages. She said,
"There are a few recipes, but for the most part, this seems to consist of philosophical essays on gastronomy."
She shut it off and turned it round and about.
"It seems to be a single unit. I don't see how one would eject the microcard and insert another. A one-book scanner. Now that's a waste."
"Maybe they think this one-book film is all anyone needs."
He reached toward the end table that was between the two beds and picked up another object. "This could be a speaker, except that there's no screen."
"Perhaps they consider the voice sufficient."
"How does it work, I wonder?"
Selden lifted it and looked at it from different sides. "Did you ever see anything like this?"
"In a museum once, if this is the same thing. Mycogen seems to keep itself deliberately archaic.
I suppose they consider that another way of separating themselves from the so-called tribesmen that surround them in overwhelming numbers. Their archaism and odd customs make them indigestible, so to speak.
There's a kind of perverse logic to all that."
Selden, still playing with the device, said, "Whoops, it went on. Or something went on, but I don't hear anything."
Doris frowned and picked up a small felt-lined cylinder that remained behind on the end table. She put it to her ear.
"There's a voice coming out of this," she said. "Here, try it."
She handed it to him.
Selden did so and said, "Ouch! It clips on."
He listened and said, "Yes, it hurt my ear. You can hear me, I take it."
"Yes, this is our room."
"No, I don't know its number. Doris, have you any idea of the number?"
Doris said, "There's a number on the speaker. Maybe that will do."
"Maybe," said Selden doubtfully. Then he said into the speaker, "The number on this device is 6LT-3648A. Will that do?"
"Well, where do I find out how to use this device properly, and how to use the kitchen for that matter?"
"What do you mean it all works the usual way? That doesn't do me any good."
"See here, I'm a tribesman, an honored guest. I don't know the usual way."
"Yes, I'm sorry about my accent, and I'm glad you can recognize a tribesman when you hear one. My name is Harry Selden."
There was a pause, and Selden looked up at Doris with a long-suffering expression on his face. "He has to look me up, and I suppose he'll tell me he can't find me."
"Oh, you have me? Good. In that case, can you give me the information?"
"Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
And how can I call someone outside Mycogen?"
"Oh, then what about contacting Sunmaster 14, for instance?"
"Well, his assistant, then. His aide, whatever."
"Uh-huh.
Thank you."
He put the speaker down, unhooked the hearing device from his ear with a little difficulty, turned the whole thing off, and said, "They'll arrange to have someone show us anything we need to know, but he can't promise when that might be."
"You can't call outside Mycogen. Not on this thing, anyway. So we couldn't get Hummin if we needed him. And if I want Sunmaster 14, I've got to go through a tremendous rigmarole. This may be an egalitarian society,
but there seem to be exceptions that I bet no one will openly admit. He looked at his watch. In any case, Doris, I'm not going to view a cookbook, and still less am I going to view learned essays. My watch is still telling university time, so I don't know if it's officially bedtime, and at the moment I don't care. We've been awake most of the night, and I would like to sleep. That's all right with me. I'm tired, too. Thanks. And whenever a new day starts after we've caught up on our sleep, I'm going to ask for a tour of their microfood plantations. Doris looked startled. Are you interested? Not really. But if that's the one thing they're proud of, they should be willing to talk about it. And once I get them into a talking mood, then by exerting all my charm, I may get them to talk about their legends, too. Personally, I think that's a clever strategy. I hope so, said Doris dubiously. But I think that the Mycogenians will not be so easily trapped. We'll see, said Selden grimly. I mean to get those legends. 39. The next morning found Harry using the calling device again. He was angry, because for one thing, he was hungry. His attempt to reach Sunmaster 14 was deflected by someone who insisted that Sunmaster could not be disturbed. Why not? Selden had asked waspishly. Obviously, there is no need to answer that question, came back a cold voice. We were not brought here to be prisoners, said Selden with equal coldness, nor to starve. I'm sure you have a kitchen and ample supplies of food. Yes, we do, said Selden, and I do not know how to use the kitchen devices, nor do I know how to prepare the food. Do you eat it raw, fry it, boil it, roast it? I can't believe you are ignorant in such matters. Doors, who had been pacing up and down during this colloquy, reached for the device, and Selden fended her off, whispering, He'll break the connection if a woman tries to speak to him. Then, into the device, he said more firmly than ever, What you believe or don't believe doesn't matter to me in the least. You send someone here, someone who can do something about our situation, or when I reach Sunmaster 14, as I will eventually, you will pay for this. Nevertheless, it was 2 hours before someone arrived, by which time Selden was in a state of savagery, and Doris had grown rather desperate in her attempt to soothe him. The newcomer was a young man, whose bald pate was slightly freckled, and who probably would have been a redhead otherwise. He was bearing several pots, and he seemed about to explain them when he suddenly looked uneasy and turned his back on Selden in alarm. Tridesman, he said, obviously agitated, your skin cap is not well adjusted. Selden, whose impatience had reached the breaking point, said, That doesn't bother me. Doris, however, said, Let me adjust it, Harry. It's just a bit too high here on the left side. Selden then growled, You can turn now, young man. What is your name? I am Grey Cloud Five, said the Mycogenian uncertainly as he turned and looked cautiously at Selden. I am a novitiate. I have brought a meal for you. He hesitated. From my own kitchen, where my woman prepared it, tribesman. He put the pots down on the table, and Selden raised one lid and sniffed the contents suspiciously. He looked up at Doris in surprise. You know, it doesn't smell bad. Doris nodded. You're right. I can smell it, too. Grey Cloud said, It's not as hot as it ought to be. It cooled off in transport. You must have crockery and cutlery in your kitchen. Doris got what was needed, and after they had eaten, largely and a bit greedily, Selden felt civilized once more. Doris, who realized that the young man would feel unhappy at being alone with a woman, and even unhappier if she spoke to him, found that, by default, it fell to her to carry the pots and dishes into the kitchen and wash them, once she deciphered the controls of the washing device. Meanwhile, Selden asked the local time and said, somewhat abashed, "You mean it's the middle of the night?" "Indeed, tribesman," said Grey Cloud. "That's why it took a while to satisfy your need." Selden understood suddenly why Sunmaster could not be disturbed, and thought of Grey Cloud's woman having to be awakened to prepare him a meal, and felt his conscience gnaw at him. "I'm sorry," he said. "We are only tribespeople, and we didn't know how to use the kitchen, or how to prepare the food. In the morning, could you have someone arrive to instruct us properly?" "The best I can do, tribesman," said Grey Cloud placatingly, "is to have two sisters sent in. I ask your pardon for inconveniencing you with feminine presence, but it is they who know these things." Doris, who had emerged from the kitchen, said, before remembering her place in the masculine Mycogenian society, "That's fine, Grey Cloud. We'd love to meet the sisters." Grey Cloud looked at her uneasily and fleetingly, but said nothing. Selden, convinced that the young Mycogenian would, on principle, refuse to have heard what a woman said to him, repeated the remark. "That's fine, Grey Cloud. We'd love to meet the sisters." His expression cleared at once. "I will have them here as soon as it is day." When Grey Cloud had left, Selden said with some satisfaction, "The sisters are likely to be exactly what we need."
"Indeed? And in what way, Harry?" asked Doris.
"Well, surely if we treat them as though they are human beings, they will be grateful enough to speak of their legends."
"If they know them," said Doris skeptically. "Somehow I have no faith that the Mycogenians bother to educate their women very well."
40. The sisters arrived some 6 hours later, after Selden and Doris had slept some more, hoping to readjust their biological clocks. The sisters entered the apartment shyly, almost on tiptoe. Their gowns, which it turned out were termed kirtles in the Mycogenian dialect, were soft, velvety gray, each uniquely decorated by a subtle pattern of fine, darker gray webbing. The kirtles were not entirely unattractive, but they were certainly most efficient at covering up any human feature. And, of course, their heads were bald, and their faces were devoid of any ornamentation. They darted speculative glances at the touch of blue at the corners of Dora's eyes, and at the slight red stain at the corners of her lips. For a few moments, Selden wondered how one could be certain that the sisters were truly sisters. The answer came at once, with the sisters' politely formal greetings. Both twittered and chirped. Selden, remembering the grave tones of Sunmaster, and the nervous baritone of Grey Cloud, suspected that women, in default of obvious sexual identification, were forced to cultivate distinctive voices and social mannerisms.
"I'm Raindrop 43, twittered one, "and this is my younger sister."
"Raindrop 45, chirped the other.
"We're very strong on raindrops in our cohort," she giggled.
"I am pleased to meet you both," said Doris gravely. "But now I must know how to address you. I can't just say Raindrop, can I?"
"No," said Raindrop 43. "You must use the full name if we are both here."
Selden said, "How about just 43 and 45, ladies?"
They both stole a quick glance at him, but said not a word. Doris said softly, "I'll deal with them, Harry." Selden stepped back. Presumably they were single young women, and very likely they were not supposed to speak to men. The older one seemed the graver of the two, and was perhaps the more puritanical. It was hard to tell from a few words and a quick glance, but he had the feeling, and was willing to go by that. Doris said, "The thing is, sisters, that we tribespeople don't know how to use the kitchen."
"You mean you can't cook?"
Raindrop 43 looked shocked and censorious. Raindrop 45 smothered a laugh. Selden decided that his initial estimate of the two was correct. Doris said, "I once had a kitchen of my own, but it wasn't like this one, and I don't know what the foods are, or how to prepare them."
"It's really quite simple," said Raindrop 45. "We can show you."
"We'll make you a good, nourishing lunch," said Raindrop 43. "We'll make it for both of you."
She hesitated before adding the final words. It clearly took an effort to acknowledge the existence of a man.
"If you don't mind," said Doris, "I would like to be in the kitchen with you, and I would appreciate it if you'd explain everything exactly. After all, sisters, I can't expect you to come here 3 times a day to cook for us."
"We will show you everything," said Raindrop 43, nodding her head stiffly. "It may be difficult for a tribeswoman to learn, however. You wouldn't have the feeling for it."
"I shall try," said Doris with a pleasant smile.
They disappeared into the kitchen. Selden stared after them and tried to work out the strategy he intended to use. Microfarm. Mycogen. The microfarms of Mycogen are legendary, though they survive today only in such oft-used similes as "rich as the microfarms of Mycogen" or "tasty as Mycogenian yeast." Such encomiums tend to intensify with time, to be sure, but Harry Selden visited those microfarms in the course of the flight, and there are references in his memoirs that would tend to support the popular opinion. Encyclopedia Galactica. 41. "That was good," said Selden explosively. "It was considerably better than the food Grey Cloud brought." Doris said reasonably, "You have to remember that Grey Cloud's woman had to prepare it on short notice, in the middle of the night." She paused and said, "I wish they would say wife. They make woman sound like such an appanage, like my house or my robe. It is absolutely demeaning."
"I know. It's infuriating. But they might well make wife sound like an appanage as well. It's the way they live, and the sisters don't seem to mind. You and I aren't going to change it by lecturing. Anyway, did you see how the sisters did it?"
"Yes, I did. And they made everything seem very simple. I doubted I could remember everything they did, but they insisted I wouldn't have to. I could get away with mere heating. I gathered the bread had some sort of micro-derivative added to it in the baking that both raised the dough and lent it that crunchy consistency and warm flavor. Just a hint of pepper, didn't you think?"
"I couldn't tell, but whatever it was, I didn't get enough. And the soup. Did you recognize any of the vegetables?"
"No."
"And what was the sliced meat? Could you tell?"
"I don't think it was sliced meat, actually. We did have a lamb dish back on Cinna that it reminded me of."
"It was certainly not lamb."
"I said that I doubted it was meat at all. I don't think anyone outside Mycogen eats like this either,
Not even the Emperor, I'm sure. Whatever the Mycogenians sell is, I'm willing to bet, near the bottom of the line. They save the best for themselves.
We had better not stay here too long, Harry. If we get used to eating like this, we'll never be able to acclimatize ourselves to the miserable stuff they have outside.
She laughed. Selden laughed, too. He took another sip at the fruit juice, which tasted far more tantalizing than any fruit juice he had ever sipped before, and said,
"Listen, when Hammond took me to the university, we stopped at a roadside diner and had some food that was heavily yeasted. It tasted like... Now, never mind what it tasted like, but I wouldn't have thought it conceivable then that microfood could taste like this. I wish the sisters were still here. It would have been polite to thank them."
I think they were quite aware of how we would feel. I remarked on the wonderful smell while everything was warming, and they said quite complacently that it would taste even better.
The older one said that, I imagine.
Yes, the younger one giggled. "And they'll be back. They're going to bring me a kirtle, so that I can go out to see the shops with them. And they made it clear I would have to wash my face if I was to be seen in public. They will show me where to buy some good quality kirtles of my own, and where I can buy ready-made meals of all kinds. All I'll have to do is heat them up. They explained that decent sisters wouldn't do that, but would start from scratch. In fact, some of the meal they prepared for us was simply heated, and they apologized for that. They managed to imply, though, that tribespeople couldn't be expected to appreciate true artistry in cooking, so that simply heating prepared food would do for us. They seemed to take it for granted, by the way, that I will be doing all the shopping and cooking.
As we say at home, when in Trantor, do as the Trantorians do.
Yes, I was sure that would be your attitude in this case.
I'm only human, said Selden.
The usual excuse, said Doris with a small smile.
Selden leaned back with a satisfactory, well-filled feeling and said, "You've been on Trantor for 2 years, Doris, so you might understand a few things that I don't. Is it your opinion that this odd social system the Mycogenians have is part of a supernaturalistic view they have?"
Supernaturalistic?
Yes. Would you have heard that this was so?
What do you mean by supernaturalistic?
The obvious. A belief in entities that are independent of natural law, that are not bound by the conservation of energy, for instance, or by the existence of a constant of action.
I see. You're asking if Mycogen is a religious community.
It was Selden's turn.
Religious? Yes, it's an archaic term, but we historians use it. Our study is riddled with archaic terms. Religious is not precisely equivalent to supernaturalistic, though it contains richly supernaturalistic elements. I can't answer your specific question, however, because I've never made any special investigation of Mycogen. Still, from what little I've seen of the place, and from my knowledge of religions in history, I wouldn't be surprised if the Mycogenian society was religious in character.
In that case, would it surprise you if Mycogenian legends were also religious in character?
No, it wouldn't.
And therefore, not based on historical matter.
That wouldn't necessarily follow. The core of the legends might still be authentically historic, allowing for distortion and supernaturalistic intermixture.
Ah, said Selden, and seemed to retire into his thoughts. Finally, Doris broke the silence that followed and said,
"It's not so uncommon, you know. There is a considerable religious element on many worlds, It's grown stronger in the last few centuries as the empire has grown more turbulent. On my world of Cinna, at least a quarter of the population is tritheistic.
Selden was again painfully and regretfully conscious of his ignorance of history. He said, "Were there times in past history when religion was more prominent than it is today?"
"Certainly. In addition, there are new varieties springing up constantly. The Mycogenean religion, whatever it might be, could be relatively new and may be restricted to Mycogen itself. I couldn't really tell without considerable study."
"But now we get to the point of it, Doris. Is it your opinion that women are more apt to be religious than men are?" Doris Benevoli raised her eyebrows.
"I'm not sure if we can assume anything as simple as that."
She thought a bit.
"I suspect that those elements of a population that have a smaller stake in the material natural world are more apt to find solace in what you call supernaturalism. The poor, the disinherited, the downtrodden. Insofar as supernaturalism overlaps religion, they may also be more religious. There are obviously many exceptions in both directions. Many of the downtrodden may lack religion. Many of the rich, powerful, and satisfied may possess it."
"But in Mycogen," said Selden, "where the women seem to be treated as subhuman, would I be right in assuming they would be more religious than the men, more involved in the legends that the society has been preserving?"
"I wouldn't risk my life on it, Harry, but I'd be willing to risk a week's income on it."
"Good," said Selden thoughtfully. Doris smiled at him.
"There's a bit of your psychohistory, Harry. Rule number 47,854. The downtrodden are more religious than the satisfied."
Selden shook his head. "Don't joke about psychohistory, Doris. You know I'm not looking for tiny rules, but for vast generalizations and for means of manipulation. I don't want comparative religiosity as the result of 100 specific rules. I want something from which I can, after manipulation through some system of mathematicized logic, say, 'Aha, this group of people will tend to be more religious than that group, provided that the following criteria are met, and that therefore, when humanity meets with these stimuli, it'll react with these responses.'"
"How horrible," said Doris. "You are picturing human beings as simple mechanical devices. Press this button and you will get that twitch."
"No, because there will be many buttons pushing simultaneously to various degrees and eliciting so many responses of different sorts that overall the predictions of the future will be statistical in nature, so that the individual human being will remain a free agent."
"How can you know this?"
"I can't," said Selden. "At least I don't know it. I feel it to be so. It is what I consider to be the way things ought to be. If I can find the axioms, the fundamental laws of humanics, so to speak, and the necessary mathematical treatment, then I will have my psychohistory. I have proved that in theory this is possible.